To begin your hearing, the Honorable Mr. David Neal will conduct your hearing at this time, sir. So just hang on to the phone.
Okay.
Can you hear me okay, sir?
Yes.
Okay, sir. First off, would you state your full name and agency number for the record?
Dennis Barber, 49100.
Thank you, sir. You're attorney for the Arizona Brothers Judge coming through this morning in reference to the program. I'm going to introduce the board members that come up to hearing today. On the screen to your far left is the Honorable Gail Rittenhouse. Then we have the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who's our board chairman. Our lady to the right is the Honorable Ray Canales. My name is David Neal, and I'll be hearing you. So that you know, there are two supporters in the boardroom for you today. We thank your mother and stepfather. And at the proper time, if they wish to speak, then I'll let them come forward to the podium and speak on your behalf, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, so I'm going to go over some information about duty and sentencing and just different things like that. As I go through, if you hear something that you think is incorrect, please let me know and we'll talk about it. Let's get down to a certain stage, then I will go into asking you some very specific questions and stuff, okay?
Okay.
All right, so you're 56 years old now, sir?
Yes.
Okay, you're serving a life sentence for aggravated assault, which began July 18, 1988. Also, while serving this sentence, you received a one-year sentence for promoting prison contraband. It began July 17, 1995, and it was to be served concurrently, so that has expired. You were convicted by a jury and you were sentenced on January 6, 1989. You were originally charged with two counts of aggravated assault, but you were convicted of count one and acquitted on count two. You appealed and the conviction and sentencing were affirmed. You were on parole for kidnapping when the infant offense occurred. That's probably why you got the life sentence.
Right.
Okay. It seems that on July 17, 1988, you assaulted the victim by striking her under the chin with your fist and then brandishing a firearm and threatening her with the gun. I believe that while that was going on, there was a person that was in the house, came out to intervene, but they were carrying a chair. And they saw the gun go back inside, and that's where because you were brandishing the firearm, that's where the second count of aggravated assault came from, and that particular count was the one you were acquitted on.
That was because he was charging at me with a machete.
Well, that's what I just said. He came out of the house with a machete and then you were acquitted of that charge.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
But see, that's
okay,
what
sir,
the
sir,
came
sir.
Out.
Okay. That part there was covered where you were convicted, so we're not gonna be dealing with the machete or any of that particular point, okay? It appears that there have been some long-standing animosity between you and that victim that you were convicted of, and that's what led to an argument which preceded the assault. You became parole eligible on July 13, 2014, and were certified for this particular hearing on April 11, 2019. See that from the information we have, March 24, 2014, you were granted parole by the board. But on September 21st, 2015, your parole was revoked for use of meth from morphine and for not participating in assigned programming. Since you've been reincarcerated then, you've come before the board on three previous occasions and you were denied each time. That sound pretty correct so far, sir?
Yes.
Okay. Then you had, you had a little criminal history prior to out of this, but in 1983, you were sentenced to 7 years for kidnapping, and you were on parole for that offense when this infant offense occurred. While incarcerated before your parole, you had a very extensive disciplinary record with six violations during the year prior to that parole. Since you've been reincarcerated, you only had one violation, which was on October 2nd, 2017. It was a very serious violation of aggravated assault on another inmate. That offense was recorded on video surveillance, and it showed you striking the other inmate on the face with a prison-made weapon that was approximately 6 inches long. And that weapon was found near where the assault occurred in the yard. You have some programming recently, including conflict resolution and two other classes. According to your release plan, your mother is going to get you into the Salvation Army rehab, but we don't have any verification from Salvation Army that you've been accepted. You plan on working as a tattoo artist. There's nothing in the packet that indicates any family or community support, but you do have supporters that showed up today. So, Mr. Berger, I'm going to talk to you about the offense and what was going on in your life at that time. It seems that you had an attitude that you could pretty much do whatever you wanted, whenever you wanted it, and that's part of what got you in trouble. So, since you convinced the board in, at one point in time that you had rehabilitated enough to be released, tell me what happened when you were on parole. Why you decided to use meth and morphine and wouldn't follow the programming?
Well, stupidity, you know. That's all that was. I've, for 3 years now, I've been good, clean, trying to work on other programs, trying to get, I'm a painter now, I paint walls, do murals and stuff like that.
Okay.
As far as the knife thing, he came into my house, threatened me, put hands on me, and took my store, and ran out, and that's where that happened. I didn't want to do nothing, but I felt threatened, I felt all that, you know?
Okay, well, let's go back to the parole. Like I asked you, what made you decide to do morphine and meth? Well, you know, you're only out a total of about a year and a half. But as long as you've been in prison, you know, which is over 25 years, why would you go out and jeopardize your freedom by reverting to drugs and stuff?
I don't know. I didn't think, you know. I got kind of scared, I guess, you know.
Okay.
I didn't want to fail, you know. And I felt like I was failing a little bit. And it just happened to be there, and that's kind of what happened, you know. Because I was trained for six months, you know. When I got out, I was working hard. I was doing real well. Kind of very ashamed of it.
Okay, but you also didn't do the program that you were assigned.
The only reason, I had two strikes, and that was just because of work. And I was working at Arizona, let me think, RV restoration on 27th, and I worked in the heat all day, and my boss was letting me go home a little bit early to go to the classes, and sometimes I would miss him, you know?
Okay.
It was like I didn't want to go, you know?
Okay, well, so I'd like to talk to you a little bit about that aggravated assault that you got into. Now, you said they came into your cell and attacked you?
Yes.
And then you attacked this other person, this other inmate out in the yard in the open, and you did it with a prison-made weapon.
Yeah, well, he attacked me too, you know what I mean? But that was in my cell, you know? And took all my store for no reason. You know, I didn't know what to do.
So they, well, you said
they took them.
But what did they take of yours?
They took $50 worth of store, $300 pair of glasses that my mom bought for me, other ends, you know.
So did you let the prison staff know that that had occurred?
No, it just happened instantaneously. I just had gotten a job doing wall murals, and I came back with my sack of $50 worth of store, and that's when he came in, snatched it up, you know?
Okay, well, the one that you attacked, I mean, you said they did it, but how many came in and got you?
Well, it was only one, but there was others, you know what I mean? And for that to happen by the stairs, under camera and everything, he came at me again, you know, threatening me again.
Okay, I'm a little bit confused by it, but that's
I apologize, you know.
So that's about a year and a half ago. But why did you have a weapon that you made in prison?
Because where we're at, it's always a threat. Always a threat. You know? And it's more for safety than anything else. You know?
Okay, so tell me what, in your own words, why you think that you have changed and rehabilitated enough since you were revoked from the parole. Why or what you've done to get yourself back and over so that you make a good candidate to go back out into the community?
Well, for one, my mom, she's my everything, you know. She's helped me go through a lot of stuff. The classes that I've taken, I was taking a rehab class, and she left, so I didn't get to finish that. My priorities didn't work, and to improve my artwork, I'm a very, very good artist. And that's all I've been doing is working, you know? Even when I was in Max for that incident, the warden came and seen some of my artwork and got me this job, got me in the honor board, and I'm right there now. And I'm supposed to start painting the nurses' area, and they all want real nice paintings and stuff like that, so I just got approved for that. So that's what I've been focusing on, and that's improving my life. I make money out there with it, not just tattooing, but wall murals, anything, you know, that does with art. But I don't have a problem working or any other job. I just want a chance to get my life back together, you know. Right now, I'm doing fantastic, and I want to keep it that way and keep moving forward. You know, I know I've made a lot of bad mistakes, and I paid for them dearly, you know. and hopefully it's been enough. 35 years is a lot of time, you know? But some of it I deserve, some of it I didn't, you know?
Okay. I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions at this time.
Just have one quick one. Okay, I just have one quick one. If I heard you correct, sir, and related to it, methamphetamine and other drugs that you had, illegal stuff you had, you said it just happened to have been there. Well, how did it get there, sir? Where was there?
Well, somebody bought some at my house, and that's where it started. You know what I mean? Because I just got denied on a marriage that I proposed, and I was feeling down, and somebody had come over and had some drugs, and that's when it all started.
So did you use it just that one time, or did you use it several times? What happened, sir?
Not very many times, but, you know, enough to get me in trouble, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have a habit or nothing, just, you know, stupidity, you know?
Well, you don't sound stupid.
Sir,
I'll be honest with you. You don't sound stupid to me. You sound like an intelligent gentleman, and that's why I'm just trying to figure out why would you use. You had your freedom. This board had given you your freedom, and then you just gave it up and over some drugs, sir.
I think the 25 years did it. You know, it's been real rough on me. You know, I'm trying to help a lot of fans and do a lot of good things in here, you know, but it's a hard place, you know. Okay. Now I'm in here, in D.C., that takes a story too, you know.
Yes, sir. Okay, well, I commend you on your artwork, but I still can't understand why you use those illegal substances. Thank you so very much, Mr. Neal.
Okay. Thank you. So, right. Any other questions? Okay. I think at this point in time, if your mother or your stepdad would speak on your behalf, then come forward to the podium. And
all right.
Okay. If you would state your name, then tell us what you'd like us to hear.
Marilyn Petroselli. I would just have to reiterate. When Chris was paroled back in 2014, myself, my husband, and actually our whole family that lives here did support him. My other son, Kyle. Things went pretty well for the first 6 months. And like Chris said, he actually had a good job. He worked at this tattoo parlor. He was making money, and he was staying at a halfway house, reborn, for a while. And at that time, he was able to pay his way. But then he did move into another home and still continued working pretty well. And then he walked off the job. And from that point on, things just didn't go well for him. And we still continued to support him. And I was always afraid that he wasn't eating, not buying his groceries for him, and giving money now and then. And then we took him to a parole hearing, not a parole hearing, but to see his parole officer one day, and we were waiting in the car for him to come out, and he never came out. His parole officer came out, and another parole officer, and explained to us that he had been on all these drugs, unbeknownst to us. We didn't know that. And the one parole officer said that, you know, he needed to tell me this, but he said, your son's an addict. And so it was very disappointing, to say the least. And I am in contact with Chris. I do allow him full privileges, and we talk. He knows how I feel about supporting him financially, but I think at this point, I've told him that he's beyond where we really feel that we can't help him anymore. That's why I had him apply to the Salvation Army. They do have a program. He did the paperwork, and I did send that in. I didn't get the paperwork until last Friday. I did email back in to Mr. Eric Scales. I haven't heard back from them, so I don't know for sure if he's going to be accepted at this point. So we're just kind of waiting, but I know that Chris is sincere about going to the Salvation Army and wants to hopefully get his life back in order and perhaps get the help that he needs.
Thank you. Any questions for the board? No questions.
Do you have any questions for me?
No, that's right.
Okay, thank you.
Would you like to say anything, sir?
No.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. My mom's been helping me.
Okay, Mr. Berger.
Yes.
All right, so we're nearing the end of your hearing.
Yes.
Before we go into discussion to make a determination, we want to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. Anything else that you would like to tell us? We just ask that you don't repeat the information we've already covered. But if you've got anything else you'd like to tell us, now would be the time.
All right. All I want to do is get my life back together. I don't do drugs. I'm good, you know. I've been clean for a long, long time, and I want to stay that way, and I want to move forward, you know, and try to get my life back together. This is not helping right here, being in prison. I know I've been down a long time, but I really want another chance. I won't let you down.
Okay, well, thank you, sir. The board will be going into discussion to make a determination. You can stand the phone, hear the whole conversation, just ask you to remain silent. And once we've made a determination, I'll get back with you. Okay, sir?
Okay. Thank you.
What is now in discussion? Well, this part is really interesting. Gentlemen, coming out of a very checkered past, as they say, when something comes in front of the board, and even though it may not have been anybody that was sitting in the board currently, but when they come in front of the board and they grant a parole, it's a tremendous amount of faith is extended toward that person, and when they violate it, it hurts the board. No matter when down the line that it happens, it's still detrimental to the board, and it feels like a violation of our trust. But we laugh into some drugs. I don't know. He says he doesn't have an addiction. I don't see evidence specifically that he does, but it also doesn't show specifically that he doesn't. But my biggest issue is that after having been on parole and been violated and he wants to be out on parole again, that he, a year and a half ago, had that pretty serious aggravated assault, and that was done with a prison-made weapon. And I understand there's some issues in prison or certainly dangerous, but that's an awfully, awfully severe violation to not only the assault, but to do it with a prison-made weapon. And it's only a year and a half since it occurred.
I'm not comfortable with the idea of returning Mr. Bonner to the community at this time, but I'm going to listen to discussion from my fellow board members if there is any.
Those same reasons came to my mind as well, so I would agree with you, concerned about those.
Dr. Ray?
You agree?
Okay, well, so based on the information we have today, I am in the reference to Chris Barger. I'm going to make a motion, and that is that we deny Mr. Barger a parole, a letter of parole, retroactive discharge at this time. And then with the date of fine, I'm going to go for a 1-year set out. That would be my motion.
Second.
Agreed.
Motion by myself, second by Mr. Canales, agreeing that I got to write this written down. And the reasons for the meeting is that it was a serious violent offense. Then there was I would say victim harassment was based on the back and forth between Mr. Barger and the victim. Rather than previous probation parole, the history of assaulting behavior, and the proud criminal history because of being incarcerated for kidnapping. Recent disciplinary infractions, and again, history of assaulting behavior. And I would say poor mental release plan, but only because we haven't gotten verification from Salvation Army or some such program that he would be accepted. And unless there's something else that I don't know if I would have added. Okay, Mr. Barger, the board has said that you deny you parole on retroactive discharge at this time. And did you hear the reasons for the denial, sir?
Yeah.
Okay, continue on the path you're going. It sounds like you're trying to straighten out and not get in trouble, stay away from the drugs. And in about a year, the Department of Corrections will certify you for another hearing, and we'll see you again and see what kind of progress you made at that time. Okay, sir?
Fine.
Thank you. And this is another hearing, and if we can put the CO3 back in front, please.
Yeah, hey.